RTE 2FM.
Tomorrow morning at 6. 2FM Breakfast.
With Carl, Roz and Ashley.
Right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Well, a big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, June 9th. You're listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
And coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Niall Moran and Alan Cadigan reflect on a memorable weekend of provincial hurling and Joe McDonagh hurling action. Stephen Ferris chats through the big talking points from the URC semi-finals, while Gary Cahill reviews French Open victories for Carlos Alcaraz and Coco Gauff.
Alan Cawley is with us to chat Association football, and we'll hear from Hamer Hagrimsson ahead of Ireland's clash with Luxembourg tomorrow night. And of course, we will debate our weekend sporting highlights. So if you want to get in touch, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Happy Monday, Ruby Walsh. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Shane Dawson, and it is a happy-ish Monday for the 9th of June. It's more like an April.
It's a bit dreary, but we're going to bring the spirits up, aren't we, Alan Cawley?
I have the energy. I have the energy, Shane. Yes, I love Mondays, as you know.
So and whereabouts in the world were you for the weekend then? Are we just plonked on a couch watching sport?
Well, the couch will be like...
standard.
I'm one of the best... Standard, yes, Shane. Well,
I thought you'd have been in Paris for the French Open final or something.
But that's on the hit list. That is on the hit list. After what I watched yesterday, and I'm sure we're going to get into it, but... Will we go there right now?
The Munster final on clay. Yeah, go on.
I did see someone say that, actually. So my highlight was, I'm going to start with the hurling because I did watch the hurling as well and it was brilliant. And you know I love the hurling. But it wasn't just the match. There was just one moment, and obviously there was loads of moments in the game, but there was one amazing moment by who I felt was probably the best player on the night as well. Aaron Gillan was outstanding, but never in my life have I seen a ball, a schlitter, come into a centre forward, basically.
Good pronunciation.
Come in and literally flick it with his left foot and knew exactly what he was doing, like a deft little touch that you'd see Messi produce into the hands of the oncoming player and buried it into, I think they got a point from it or whatever. But I just thought...
The goal, wasn't it?
Or was it the goal?
I think it was into Sean O'Brien's hand, was it?
I just thought it was an unbelievable moment, Ruby. For that, like, the skill...
Aidan O'Connor's even...
The skill level of that, just the deftness of it, especially how small and fast the slitter is coming at you. But he knew exactly what he was doing, and I thought he was unbelievable on the night, his whole performance. But then we take it into Sunday, and yeah, like what more can be said after what we watched and witnessed yesterday? We're spoiled rotten with sport. We really are, and I don't think people realise that at times. And of course we're sport mad, and I'm sport mad, as we all are, but... Yesterday's standard of tennis. And I made a comment, Ruby. You weren't around in these days, Ruby, but I'm going to bring you in on this conversation. So I made a comment about, it was a few years back, and I used to watch a lot of tennis. Probably since Nadal is retired, I wouldn't say I watch as much. And with the emergence of these two, I think it's roping me back in after what I watched yesterday. But I felt back in the golden generation, and I include Murray in this because Murray was there, not just competing with them, winning as well. Then you had Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. I felt at the time what they were producing in their own sport, that no other sport was reaching the levels that they were producing in their sport. Across the board, it was phenomenal what we were watching with them. And I never felt ever that we'd see anyone as good as what they were to have three... I won't include Murray in... I'll have three of the greatest ever with Djokovic, Federer and Nadal. Murray up there, but not quite. He couldn't sustain it, really. But certainly for a period, he was in the four. I never, ever thought that you'd see anything like what we watched with those when they were in their pomp. And to think we have these two at 22 and 23 who'd produce for the next 10 years, to have it so soon after that golden generation. And could they be better? Could they be better than what we watched?
No.
Strong statement.
That's
straight
to
in,
go
Ruby
straight
Walsh.
Out with Noah. Tell me why.
Studs up.
You can only be the best of your generation in any sport. Simple. Because there's no way of proving. Unless you're an athlete and you break a world record, then you can actually factually prove that you actually were faster than Usain Bolt or you're faster than whoever. So yes, in athletics.
Now, there's a small asterisk on that, all with the new footwear and diets and everything in sports science.
So what about if Alcaraz...
is progression. It's only a progression. Footwear, yeah, they take your asterisks, but still, maybe at 100 metres, can the footwear really make that big a difference? Maybe it will. Someone maybe will break Usain Bolt's world record. I don't think, maybe they will, but I'm not so sure. But no, I don't think so. You get Nadal in at his very best on clay. You get Federer at his very best at Wimbledon or in a hard court in Australia or America. I don't know, Alan. I think you can only be the best of your generation, and the constant debate of one generation to the next, when you will never know the answer, is only opinion.
Yeah, and I get the whole comparing eras thing, and I'm fine with that, to be fair. And we all do it at times. I try not to do it, but we do it, and that's fine. And I get what you're saying on that one. But the standard that they were reaching was so good that I never thought I'd see anything like it. But what if Alcaraz goes on and beats... He has five majors now already. What if he goes on and beats the 24?
Well, fair play to him if he goes on and beats the 24. But as you're saying, he only has to beat Sinner. Whereas Djokovic had to beat Nadal and Federer.
Yeah, but hold on. If he has 24 titles or whatever the mark is that... Could you not compare that to someone breaking a world record?
Yeah.
So if someone has the record for Grand Slam titles or majors in whatever sport, and I know we're just focusing on tennis here, is that not similar then to he now holds the record? He is the greatest.
He does hold the record. He holds the record for the number of Grand Slams won. Does that make him the greatest player? That depends on where you stand on what makes whoever the best. I mean, it's the argument will go on forever. Messi or Ronaldo.
But
it's an opinion, and that's not the one is better than the other.
And the Messi Ronaldo debate isn't defined on how many World Cups or how many Ballon d'Ors they have.
But what amazes me, and we're going off on a tangent in terms of debating who's the
best. That's allowed. It's a Monday. Yeah.
You're involved, Alan. Yeah.
Sorry, but but on this one, Ruby, what's the most amazing thing for me? Because as I said, I never thought I'd see anything like Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. To have it so soon after them, because obviously Djokovic is still going 38
now. Did they set the standard? Did they set a level or set a standard that, and they were so soon that the other lads, when they were teenagers, were aspiring to get to?
Well, obviously. Mm. And that's maybe why we've seen it so soon. But I thought the standard was so high with them, Ruby, that we'd never see it. Anything like them are, now maybe I thought we might get one or two to get close to it, but I never thought we'd see anything like that. Whereas what I'm watching yesterday, and to think after 5.5 hours they're still peaking and hitting that standard, to have it so soon after those, I never thought I'd see the day. There were just it was a shame someone had to lose, and I know sport, you have to lose. I'm fine with that. It was so good that it was actually a shame someone had to lose.
You wanted to go to extra time.
And that's another thing. What other sport goes on for 5.5 hours and they're still playing to the peak of their powers?
Dog.
Straight in, Ruby again. He's
well,
on it.
It does go on 5.5 hours. Like,
yeah, but
so
it's not more intense as running around a tennis course, surely.
No, you just ask what goes on for 5.5 hours and they're still playing their best at the end. And golf is the answer. Yeah. It mightn't have been as intense, but they're still there.
You get a dicky back carrying a golf bag around the golf course for
if they were carrying the bag.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was amazing, wasn't it? It was absolutely amazing.
No, it was. It was incredible. We're going to get Gary Cahill's thoughts on that a little bit later. We will chat hurling very shortly with Alan Cadigan.
What was your sport highlight?
No more. I had a couple of medium lights, if that makes sense. On the hurling, massive congratulations, of course, to your native county, Ruby Kildare. However, Laois goalkeeper, did you see the save? The double save? The incredible double save? Laois goalkeeper, Cathal Dunne's double save against Colin McCabe and Jack Sheridan. One on one with Kildare's Colin McCabe. Dives to the right to block it out. Jack Sheridan on hand to finish the rebound. And the goalkeeper dives full length to block it. Not just like a little...
block it.
Bang. Boss it a hurl. Good night. Absolutely incredible.
Right, this is proper hurler on the ditch now.
Right.
Right, who's someone who never played hurling. Togged out, all right, but never played. Why didn't Jack Sheridan just pull? When he put the slitter in his hand, he gave the keeper the opportunity to get across. All he had to do was pull.
I hit it first time.
Yeah.
He wanted to compose himself, perhaps. He wanted to give this moment to Cathal Dunne and the Laois goalkeeper.
But he did. It was an incredible save. But should he have ever gotten the opportunity to make the save, I would say no is the answer.
But he did. Stop taking away from the goalkeeper, Ruby. Come on,
he's
man.
He's always goalkeeper's union.
You got to look at it. You think, what a save. I looked at it and thought, how did you miss?
And by the way, will you remember this for me as well? I'm going to throw this in on top of my one. Obviously, we do the highlights for Mondays and the weekends.
Yeah.
Sinner and Alcaraz is gone by the Monday. It's in the highlights of the year and could be forever. So remember that when we're talking about Christmas.
We will. End of year. When we have end our December year. Show, we'll absolutely do
I
that.
I hope Ron and Lawler and Laura Lee Davis remember that, because the chances the three of us remember it.
Mark it down.
We're going to mark it down.
Zero.
13 minutes past 6 on the 9th of June. We'll mark that one down. Yeah, so massive credit to Colin Dunn and the Laois goalkeeper. Replacing Enda Rowland as well, who's a great stopper for Laois over the years as well. So great stop. Similarly, just rounding off a couple of small little bits. Credit to David Snaid at the42.ie, who noticed this one. Francesco Totti.
I saw
generational player.
I retweeted it last night.
Oh, did you? Apologies.
Shit.
Apologies.
I retweeted it. Must have you muted on Twitter.
In a charity match, you friend.
Amazing.
Flicks it up outside of the boot. Ball bounces, catches it midair, lobs the keeper from the halfway line.
48.
Now, people will begrudge it, like Ruby Walsh, if he's seen it, I will say it's a goalkeeper own goal because it technically hits the goalkeeper at the back.
No, it was
but
amazing.
I'm not having it. He loves the
goalkeeper. I wasn't begrudging it. I was just taking the conversation to a different level.
No, that's
each
fine.
Keeper, that was an incredible save. But when you look at it again, maybe I was looking at it through a white jersey.
Yeah, that's fair.
Probably
that's fair. That's fair.
Factor in that he's 48 and the distance the ball has travelled, and he intentionally knew what he was doing to flick it up and volley it.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely incredible stuff. And also, Mikel Antonio documented his rehab going from the horrific car crash back to playing. And it's like, it's a little minute video, and I'm not really one for all this social media and following sports stars in that regard. It's more just about the news angle, to be honest. But I think it's a really incredible watch and just what he went through, even though it's condensed into a minute. But yeah, Ruby, you were at Epsom on Saturday?
Obviously I was, but you'd have to give Sarah Healy a mention too.
Yes, yes.
Incredible on Friday night when she won the Nate Rome Diamond League, the 1500 metres. Incredible for her.
Yeah.
A shout out to the show jumpers as well, who won the Nations Cup of France in Le Beau yesterday. Bertrand Malham, Keane O'Connor, Tom Watchman and Seamus Hughes Kennedy, setting themselves up for a really good summer. And for me, yeah, Epsom. Wayne Lorden on Lambourne on Saturday.
A surprise winner?
No, he was 13-2. He's not that big a surprise winner, but a really good performance. Jumped out, made all, went hammer and tongs and never slowed down. Great performance from the horse and brilliant for Wayne Lorden too, who very easily could have had his career finished from a fall in the Irish Derby. If it wasn't last year, it was the year before. He got a really bad fall in the Irish Derby and did really well to come back. A lad who has spent his whole life at the game, so to get a chance to win an Epsom Derby, or a Derby as it's called, it's not the Epsom Derby, was magic too. And again, I mentioned Ryan Moore last week and the weekend before, on Jan Brueghel in the Coronation Cup on Friday. He was absolutely outstanding.
There has to be question marks over that French horse though, Ruby, surely.
Calandigan.
He just doesn't want to go by, does he?
No, I don't think so. I think it was brilliant tactically, Alan. I thought it was a brilliant piece of riding. Like, Ryan Moore let William Buick and Wayne Lorden off when they turned in. So when he let them go in front of him, he left himself with three or four lengths to make up. That meant he had to quicken to catch the two in front. But it also meant Mikel Barcelona had to go in Calandigan earlier than he wanted, because he had ground to make up then too. So Ryan left himself with a bit much to do. That forced Mikel Barcelona into the wrong place. They both had to quicken. And when Ryan joined William Buick then at the two pole, it meant that Mikel Barcelona was already after quickening. So he got to Ryan outside the furlong pole and Jan Brueghel just outbattled him. It was Ryan Moore riding two horses. I thought it was a brilliant piece of riding.
Okay, great stuff. We're going to have to take a quick ad break because Alan Cadigan and Noel Moran are standing by to chat hurling. We'll return to tennis and indeed football a little bit later. Stick with us here in Game On. Now we're joined by Alan Cadigan and Noel Moran to chat hurling. And of course, we will be chatting about the Joe McDonagh Cup. Don't worry, Ruby and Kildare's return to the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship for the first time since 2004. Kildare Hurling is on the up. Kilkenny are Leinster champions. But considering we do have a Corkman and a Limerick man on the line, let us begin reflecting on that Munster final. Noel Moran, if I come to you first, and let's just address it straight off the bat, what are your feelings on penalties deciding a Munster final?
Look, not ideal, but there are the rules, terms of engagement starting off, and look, obviously you give up for that game to go to a replay, and should the replay an extra time end up in the draw, then so be it in terms of time constraints. But look, it's been well documented, I even think on today's national radio, that people are very much against it. And look, when you see what some of the players have to endure when you miss the penalty, and ultimately it comes down to a lotto in terms of scoring. And so for me, only after a replay should you have some penalties, or that the time constraints weren't there. So look, but that's no sour grapes on our side. The better team probably on the evening possibly won the match, even though they might have drawn it. So look, fair play to Cork, and I'm sure Alan, they're still in celebration mode below there.
Yeah, Alan, how are the celebrations? Are they ongoing?
No, they'll be coming to an end, I'd imagine, fairly shortly. I'd say Pat Rhino and his management team won't be long now refocusing. I met Shane Kingston there. He's a close neighbour of us, and he says that they're actually back into the gym tonight. So knowing Pat and his management team, they'll be refocusing fairly fast for the next 4 weeks and see what's ahead.
You're wincing at that thought, Ruby.
Short-lived success, wasn't it? Two days and back in the gym. But hey, that's the way it is in intercounty hurling. Niall, Limerick, of course, they will be back into action sooner than Cork will be. But where do you think the 16-point turnaround came in just shy of 3 weeks?
Well, I suppose, look, when I spoke to yourselves 3 weeks ago, I was of the opinion that Cork just simply didn't show up. And ordinarily, when you take a beating like that, you'll always have two or three guys that come out with credit. But on that occasion, too, I also spoke to you about that Cork just didn't fight. And I know it might sound archaic in an era where tactics are so prevalent, but when you're getting beaten everywhere, well, sometimes you just have to put knuckle down and fight. And to be honest, it was like the words of Winston Churchill nearly came to mind then during World War II, where they're talking about fighting on the land and fighting in the sea, but we shall never give in. And I felt with Cork from the minute that, they, whatever about winning the game or losing the game, the biggest thing that they came with was, we are not going to give up. We're going to fight them at all costs. They fought them off the ball. They fought them on the sideline. They fought them on the pitch. And when you keep on fighting in any life and sport, you always give yourself a chance. And look, Cork gave themselves a chance, and Limerick probably would have regrets that they left them in the game when they could have been a little bit more clinical at times, especially in the first half. And when a team is in the game, they're coming down the home straight, then it becomes a lottery. And ultimately, in this lotto, Cork's numbers came out. So for Cork, that's what they had to bring. And do you know what I mean? When the roles are reversed to God in a couple of weeks' time, if we get the opportunity to meet them again, I'm sure that Limerick will bring that very same fight. So again, that is sport. You fight for what you get, and you get what you deserve. And on Saturday, Cork got what they deserved.
Would you agree, Alan?
Yeah, I think Niall hit the nail on the head there 3 weeks ago. Simple as that, Cork didn't show up. And just listen to Pat Ryan's management team after that defeat, I suppose. Like, he said that you should never be ashamed to be beaten against Limerick. Probably will go down as one of the best teams in history, but it was the manner of defeat, I suppose, that mostly disappointed the Cork support and Cork as a group. And as Niall said there was just no fight. There was a lack of intensity. But I just think probably Cork were caught off guard in the sense that Limerick were waiting in the long grass maybe for 8 or 9 months since the All-Ireland semi-final defeat last year. And I think they had no answer for Limerick that day from a 16-point hammering. But obviously that turnaround that happened on Saturday, I think, first of all, I think both teams have to be commended in the spectator, from a spectator point of view, of what they did playing 90 minutes of hurling. And it was nearly a shame that you had to have a loser. But I think, you know, we saw a totally different Cork there on Saturday night. There was an intensity. As Niall said there was fight. It was a game that had everything. And, you know, there was only a puck of ball at the end of it. And, you know, even though the game was a draw at at full time and after extra time, it was a shame that it had to be decided on penalties on the night.
It most certainly was. The fight was there, and I'm all for the fight. 15 against 15. But what about the management coming on to have the row with the referee, Niall? I'm not so sure that was a great look.
Well, first of all, Ruby, welcome to the top table of hurling. I know you'll be getting onto it later, so I'd be glad to hear your opinion on it. Look, it wasn't a great look.
No one wants my opinion, Niall. I don't play hurling. I want your opinion. You're the ex-hurler.
Well, again, what are we looking for? Aesthetic quality? Like, the game itself, while it wasn't...
The referee is the referee. Come on, where do you stand? Is it right or is it wrong?
So the game, look, he let the game go. Okay, so again, a number of years ago, John Keenan from Wicklow was pillared for having an All-Ireland final that was left run. And he was pillared. It was one of the classic All-Ireland finals where he just left the game run and it went like that. But I always felt on that particular occasion he was in control. I felt with Tyler Walsh, he left the game run. He probably did add to the spectacle of it, but unfortunately for him, he probably lost control of it. And where I would see it is, as if I was like Alan, as a spectator, it added to the occasion. However, if I'm to put my coach's hat on, I'm given the previous 9 months trying to coach guys how to tackle, work things to the letter of the law, try and interpret how refs are going to ref a game. And yet I go out and after 10 minutes, this is all hell breaks loose. So the one thing I would say in it was, it mightn't have been the greatest performance Tyler Walsh ever gave. I definitely don't think he was one-sided in it. And I thought that there was a balance to the poorness of decisions, if that made any sense. And going back to what your original point was about the optics of it, well, that's coming back to the fight. And again, Ruby, I'm sorry, the optics weren't hectic, but I'd much rather just have a little cameo of a 30-second flashpoint and have 90 minutes that were the most glorious 90 minutes possible. And I often say it here, people spend $2,000 or $3,000 to go away to Disneyland to have a 15-second ride where it's a roller coaster. But we paid €50 and we give out about the price of tickets. So it was €50 for what was an unbelievable roller coaster. And look, if a negative byproduct is that there's a couple of flashpoints, so be it. But when you hear the magnanimous nature of both managers towards each other after it, I think you can take it for what it is. It's just two guys fighting their side. So, no, I don't think it's as big a point as what it might be deemed by some people.
Yeah, I think Donal Logue referred to it as difficult as controlling a ship in the high seas in the dark. Alan, if we're talking about management, can I just get a word on Pat Ryan? Because handling the weight of expectation that comes with being a Cork manager, dealing with personal tragedy in the public spotlight with the death of his brother a few months ago, overcoming health battles personally in 2022 with leukemia, Alan, and seeing a transition from 20s to senior hurling, like, it's an absolutely incredible job Pat Ryan's done.
Yeah, it is. And when I was involved for 10 or 11 years, whatever manager I had over me, he always used to say that managing Cork is such a prestigious opportunity for someone. And it comes with high pressure, you know, whether it be, you know, hurling or football, for example. We're a very proud hurling county, and there's an expectation from, I suppose, the Cork support and the Cork public that we're contesting every year, whether that be Munster Championship or All-Ireland, for example. But I was involved with Pat for a year until I stepped away and retired. And look, he's an incredible man. You know, first of all, he had his battle, as you said there, battling leukemia. It's well documented, obviously, over the last couple of months, how struggles that himself and his family have faced with the passing of his brother Ray. So, you know, putting hurling aside, I suppose, he has shown great resilience to come back from that. And he's a great hurling man, as I said. And as you said there, he coached and managed a lot of these players that he's brought through from the under 20 and under 21 grade. And, you know, we're now seeing maybe that fruition of those players coming through. And, you know, but he's a big hurling man. You know, obviously, as Niall said there, we didn't like seeing the management teams getting involved at half time, for example, on Saturday evening. But I suppose there was massive passion there. There's a good rivalry between Cork and Limerick that has built up over the last number of years. But certainly, you know, he'll be keeping his feet firmly on the feet, on the ground. And as I said there, look, they'll be back in the field Thursday night preparing now for three or four weeks for an All-Ireland semi final.
No, not to throw a grenade at you here, but before we chat about Kilkenny, like, even parking the result for a moment, how would you rank the top four hurling teams in the country at the moment?
Well, look, I suppose in terms of, just before we leave aside that, Pat Ryan, just to say that it was only that they brought the fight and everything else would be a little bit disingenuous also to Cork management. Tactically, I thought they were exceptional. I thought they found a completely different way to beat Limerick last year. They lorded the puck outs in the skies, whereas on Sunday, they really targeted Limerick's half forward in terms of dragging them. So, like, that takes massive technical ability from Pat and his group. Look, ranking them? Look, sure, Cork are obviously Munster champions now. They're the team to probably chase, and I'm sure, look, we're looking probably, obviously, Kilkenny number three, Galway, Kildare, and I suppose maybe somewhere down the road we'd still little old Limerick to be there, but I suppose, look, if we have to go to Kildare, to Newbridge, we're be different now. But look, it's still going to take a very strong team to beat Limerick if they get their little parts of the puzzle right, okay? And I suppose I still think that I thought they were really, really good for the first 25 or 6 minutes, only that the final ball was either poor shot selection or maybe slightly overplayed the ball at times. And I thought if just a couple of things had gone to hand, it still would have been, you know, still would have been very, very hard to beat on the night. So look, it's Cork and Limerick, but Kilkenny are coming up the slipstream there as well, like, you know, and I said that's I think it's probably the most even All-Ireland Championship we've had probably in the last 4 or 5 years, because there's definitely three teams in the mixer for it, and who knows, if Tipper Galway can get it together a little bit more, they might even be into the mixer too, like, you know.
Alan, before we do jump off the Munster final, when you look at the, I was only watching on television, but you look at the stadium, you look at the crowds beforehand, and even the overhead shot as the crowd fans spilled onto the pitch and the Limerick fans disappeared out of the stadium. The Munster final, it looks an incredible atmosphere. It looks like if you could bottle it all year round, you'd have some sport, whatever sport you had.
Oh, yeah, definitely, Ruby. Like having 44,000 people there on a Saturday night is phenomenal. No, I've been lucky enough to be able to play in two Munster finals, 2014 against Limerick and 2017. And, you know, the Munster Championship, it's hot, it's ferocious, for example. I know, if, you know, the Leinster Championship maybe gets that little bit of stick that it doesn't compete as much with the Munster Championship. And, like, Cork and Limerick have come through, I suppose, round robin games there, that there's huge intensity, for example, going in, week out. But as you said there, if you could bottle that, it was my first time experiencing as a spectator at a Munster final Saturday evening, and just even the colour, for example, the green, the red, the energy that was around the stadium in the build up to the game. The, you know, I was down in Limerick City for a small bit, and you know, the crowds that were gathering, everyone was in great form. And obviously, to top it all off then, having 90 minutes of plus hurling was unbelievable for amateur players. And as I said there at the start, that, you know, those two sets of teams should be commended for all their efforts that they've done. They left everything out in the field. And I suppose anyone that's looking in, you know, that's our national treasure. That's our game. And, you know, long may it continue. And that game, I just heard today that it was the first Munster Championship final that was won on penalties. So whether we agree in it or disagree, you know, that's something that will definitely live long in the memory.
Nigel, we do go to the Leinster final. Do you think, and I know Croke Park is incredible and it's this amazing place and a fabulous pitch, etc., but to generate that atmosphere that's at a Munster final, does the Leinster final have to go to a smaller stadium?
Yeah, definitely. And there's no doubt in my mind. If that game was played in Tullamore or Portlaoise, obviously we'd have a scramble for tickets, as well alluded to, and it would create the atmosphere. And look, Croke Park, even if there were 60,000 people in Croke Park, it's still sometimes kind of a hollow feel of it. All right, so like again yesterday, you had 37. I think 10,000 of those came from some of the free tickets that were given, a great initiative. But ultimately, I suppose that Galway aren't renowned as the greatest travel, and Kilkenny being a small county, they tend to save their money for later on in the year. So if it would have generated a greater atmosphere, and there's no doubt about it that players feed off that atmosphere, you do feed off it, like, you know. And I suppose for Galway, like, they would have needed, when they, even they're coming down the home straight, when they kind of shot 1-6 without reply, even to have that little bit of noise, that would have, it would have even put the spook up. It would have spooked probably Kilkenny to an extent, and obviously would have driven on Galway. But irrespective of the crowds that was there, whatever else, there was no doubting Kilkenny's superiority. And to be fair to them, they are still a very, very strong team. And if it is maybe possibly Limerick or Dublin that they play in a semi-final, Kilkenny are going to take fair beating. And for Galway, I know that, look, they only got 32 shots off in a game of that magnitude. And I'd say Colin Mannion probably account for over half of those. So they have a lot of work to do as they move forward too.
Yeah, on the performance from Kilkenny, Alan, last All-Ireland, what, 2015, beaten finalists four times since. How good, or what stood out in particular from their performance at the weekend? And also, is there an All-Ireland in this group?
Yeah, well, you certainly can't rule them out, Shane. You know, I think any time that Kilkenny are challenging, I heard Owen Murphy speaking after that, you know, they targeted the league, obviously. Once the league was done, their focus was the Leinster Championship, obviously. And that's another box tick for them yesterday. So, you know, they wanted to go the direct route. They're now in an All-Ireland semi-final. Their opponents, obviously, they're waiting on that. But I certainly don't think you can rule them out. I know you have your Cork and your Limerick and probably the big talk about that. But you also have, as I said, Galway, Tipperary, for example. They're waiting in the long grass. But certainly I think you can't rule out Kilkenny. What I liked about them yesterday was their work rate, and that word work rate is constantly mentioned, whether that be Derek Ling, for example, players that are interviewed after the game. They pride themselves on that, and that hasn't changed. So they certainly will be a dangerous animal in a couple of weeks' time. And as I said, there's a big talk about Cork and Limerick, or if they meet again, for example, but certainly they'll be relishing that, and they'll be relishing an opportunity against Limerick if they get to an All-Ireland semi-final. But certainly I don't think you can rule them out, and I think they'll be working away now over the next 3-4 weeks, for example, waiting the long grass, as I said, and hopefully having another crack off Limerick probably.
Well, those games are down the road. Kildare, of course, will play Dublin next weekend for the privilege of playing Limerick the following weekend. But the Joe McDonagh, Niall, from the Christy Ring last year to Joe McDonagh this year, Brian Dowling has revolutionised Kildare hurling.
the only Sean telling this again, Ruby, truth be known. He has revolutionised in the space of 2 years. Look, I'm sure Brian Dowling and I was a little bit of contact there from one of his selectors there, Richie Root, and he said his biggest issue for the next couple of days would be to get the boys out of the pub. Well, given that I was in college with him and I knew his social habits, I think some of the players might find it the biggest job to have is to get some of the management out of the pub. But no, as I said, look, it's been an incredible achievement. Like, and I think just even reading some of the articles on it, I'd say for Brian, like maybe the expectations of a lot of these players was, okay, let's try and cement our place in the Joe McDonagh. I think he challenged them. And I think that's when you bring in guys from the likes of Kilkenny, Brian's an All-Ireland medal winner, multiple All-Ireland winning coach, be it Camogie or colleges of St. Kieran's, he challenged them to strive for a little bit more. And that is always the benefit of bringing in outside guys, that they bring you beyond out of the box. But I am going to pay special mention to the Nace club in Kildare. It's a club that I've been fortunate enough to have a couple of outings with over the years. And Richie Hogan was a particular guy I was always involved with. And Richie's son was playing yesterday, cornerback. Like, they contributed 8 guys to a team that won a Joe McDonagh and 9th as a sub. And, like, do you know what I mean? That is, I've gone from a number of years, for the last 30 years, Nace have ran an underage tournament, under 10 tournament, where they've attracted the best counties, best clubs from the strongest counties. And they've always probably either competed very well or won that tournament themselves. And, do you know what I mean? It's some small acorns that oak trees grow. And I think it's a lesson learnt. It's a lesson for every county. And I know that a lot of the Hurling Development Committee, they were very visible in the aftermath in terms of the presentation, but ultimately for counties to grow or clubs to grow, you grow from within. And I suppose they've leaned heavily on maybe the experience of some of the lads from other counties, but you grow from within. You have a hunger, you have a heart, and you suppose you always keep striving for something that's bigger than what you think it could be. And for Kildare yesterday, they did that. So going into the game, they had beaten Laois by 11 points in the group stages, and the expectation would be that Laois would overrun them, but didn't. Like, and coming down the home stretch, like, I think the last 33 minutes, like, Kildare got away 25 shots. That's incredible. So look, they're exceptionally well physically developed, and like, they're in Division 1B next year. That'll give them a huge platform to prepare for Championship. And do you know what I mean? They'll fancy themselves to take on a lot of the counties in Kildare, in Leinster. So kudos to them. It's well deserved, and you just wish that they had another week possibly to prepare for what gaming in a great occasion against Dublin.
Okay, gents, we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Time is against us. Just to confirm those fixtures, Saturday 1:45 in Port Laois, Laois against Tipperary in the hurling contest, and that's going to be followed by Roscommon and Cork in the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship at 4:15, where there's a doubleheader in Newbridge, 4:00 throw-in for Kildare against Dublin in the hurling, and then 6:30 for Kildare against Offaly in the Tailteann Cup. For now, Niall Moran and Alan Cadogan, thank you so much for taking the call.
Game on. Rugby.
Welcome back to Game On, where Leinster booked their place in the URC final next weekend in Croke Park when they beat Glasgow the weekend. But I think the bigger story from that came from the injury to Xander Ferguson and the chance Finlay Beelam has now gotten to go on the Lions tour. Stephen Ferris, what a chance for him.
Yeah, it sure is. There's a couple of guys actually that seem to be struggling at the minute. I think even the team selection there by Leinster at the weekend, no Josh van der Fleer as well, maybe being ultra cautious. You know, if that had been a Champions Cup final, would we see a couple of more of these guys playing? Possibly, but that's a big blow for Xander Ferguson, and obviously Tadhg Furlong seems to be struggling a little bit for fitness also. So yeah, I think Finlay Beelam, there was question marks getting into some of the big games over the last couple of years, but you know, he rarely lets the side down. He's solid in the scrum, half decent handling, and you know, he's got a half decent engine on him too. So it'd be brilliant for him and brilliant for Connacht Rugby as well to have another British and Irish Lion.
Just to mention on the injury updates, Tadhg Furlong, Gary Ringrose and Josh van der Fleer trained with Leinster today to some degree, is the quote, and are still in the running to face the Bulls in Saturday's URC final. So to some degree, Ruby, make of that what you will.
To some degree is not full training. That's what I make of to some degree. I don't know about you, Stephen Ferris, but that's exactly how I would read that one.
Yeah. Yeah, they might have went out and threw a few passes around and then got the tracksuit back on and sat and watched training. But even that's good news in itself, especially Tadhg Furlong, because it's been you know, reported over the last couple of weeks that he's been struggling with a different injury on the other leg. We're all speculating, of course. We don't know the extent of it all, but we just wish him, you know, every bit of luck to get fit over the next couple of weeks and maybe get some game time this weekend. It'd be brilliant to see him back.
And when you do look at that Leinster team, no Tadhg Furlong, no Josh van der Fleer, Caelan Dorris, Gary Ringrose, Robbie Henschel, Hugo Keenan, are we being a bit harsh on them?
No, Ruby, because they haven't won anything over the last 4 years, so that's why everybody is sort of, you talk about all this talent, and the only reason that pundits and fans and rivalry fans are getting stuck into Leinster at times is because they have that talent at their disposal and have done for the last number of years, and they haven't got over the line for one reason or another, and that's why we all expect them to do what they did on Saturday against Glasgow, was put them to bed pretty early on in the match, and were ruthless, and were pretty accurate in everything that they did, and they were a joy to watch at times as well. Jameson Gibson Park was just really at it, like he was just changing the point of contact around the breakdown. Glasgow just didn't know where to look, and that's why I think everybody, Ruby, is harsh on Leinster when they don't win or they falter at a final hurdle like they've done over the last couple of years. And until they go on this weekend and hopefully win the URC, then we'll stop getting stuck into them. And I think they understand that as well. They're not stupid. They understand that they've got a really good side, and even boys like Scott Penny, who played at the weekend, was magnificent. He was terrific, he really was. Jimmy O'Brien at fullback, I thought was exceptional. He's got pace to burn, and when you're calling in these guys, and many people we talk on here too, Ruby, about, oh yeah, it was a much changed Leinster side that went away to the Sharks or went away to the Bulls or, in different games. And these are the guys that are usually up there putting their hand up for man of the match. And it's good to see them get a run out last weekend and actually perform at a top, top level.
You mentioned people sticking a boot into Leinster. Joe McCarthy, we know everyone loves to hate Leinster. Jack Conan alluded to comments like that as well. Like, what do you make of this attempt by Leinster players to try and create this siege mentality? Like, did you ever use it as a motivating factor in your playing days?
No.
Like, is it genuine? Like, are they trying to just come up with this, and it's just something that they're going to use, perhaps, be it put it on a front in the media, or it could be genuine motivation? Like, what's your take on it?
I think Shane, over the last, 6 months, 9 months, with the signing of Jordy Barrett and then the signing of Ricky Ioane and then the signing on again of Slimani and RG Snyman, it almost felt like, everybody was sort of, it was okay for Leinster to do everything. And then, of course, the daggers come out around that stage. And then when they don't perform that well, they get off to such, flying start in the Champions Cup knockout games with obviously Glasgow, and I think it was Quinns before that, racking up over 50 points. And then everybody thought they were just going to run away. And then a slight dip in performance, a couple of key injuries, and everybody just can't wait to, wield the axe again at Leinster. And it's only because we know how good they can be, and they've shown that over the last year. And maybe it is a good thing for the Leinster boys to have, a bit of a bee in their bonnet about, people getting stuck into them. But, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. And to a certain degree, over the last 4 years, everybody that's been disappointed with Leinster has been right. And, they've got to use that for extra motivation this weekend and make sure that on Saturday that anybody who's talking about the game is giving the Leinster boys more plaudits, just like they did last weekend. But I like what Joe says. Joe's a magnificent athlete. He's a hard man, and I thought he played very well at the weekend. And he's got to play really well again this weekend. He's going to be up against the big Bulls pack. Granted, they've a bit of travelling to do across, obviously, from Pretoria in the High Veld, but they're going to come to Croke Park and give it an absolute rattle. One thing for sure is, Jake White, the Bulls coach, he's a gnarly old coach, been around the block, coached many teams, had lots of success, and obviously beating Leinster last year in the URC semi-final. He knows how to get it done. So they'll be quietly confident, but part of me feels that Leinster will hopefully shut up a few of the haters and hopefully get a trophy in the trophy cabinet, because it's just been too long.
Do you think they'll get a near sellout crowd? Joe McCarthy was all bar asking people to come.
Yeah, and It's a really weird one. I was in the stadium at the weekend, Ruby, like I'd say 2 hours before kickoff, and I took a video like maybe half an hour before kickoff, and I'd say there was not even 1,000 people in the stadium at the Aviva. And like, if you're going to an international game or going to a Champions Cup final game, like there's 30 or 40,000, if not more, 50,000 in there. It bums on seats, you know, watching the players warm up, you know, having a look at what they're doing, and there's already an atmosphere building, and that's what they need to get. That's what they have to have at Croke Park. And you know, fans need to get there early. I think last week the timing of the game obviously didn't help either with the earlier kickoff. You know, kids are only finishing their mini rugby, or you know, all their kids are finishing athletics or whatever it may be, cricket at this time of the year. So it's really difficult for parents to get everybody together and back out the door again to go and sit down at the Aviva Stadium. So with a slightly later kickoff this week, I do expect it to be better, but there are reports that there's no tickets for sale for the upper stands just yet, which would suggest, what, you know, 50-60% capacity quite possibly. But hopefully, I really hope the Leinster faithful get out there and support the lads and give them you know, something to play for, and hopefully they can give them something to cheer about.
Absolutely, here's hoping. Stephen Ferris, we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much for taking the call. We will be previewing that URC final later in the week. Just a note, actually, Leinster did release a statement regarding ticket sales. A few queries on ticket sales. We have hit 18,000 to season ticket holders yesterday on the closed link. We have 15,124 season ticket holders and are just shy of 30,000 sold after the first day of public sales. We did promise Gary Cowell on the tennis. We're going to chat tennis tomorrow to give the French Open the love that it deserves. We're going to give Alan Colley some love after the break and chat football. I'm going to finish the show with soccer.
Stick tennis if you want.
Well, you've already had your say in the tennis, Al. You can't be a man of that many talents. We're taking a short ad break, then we're chatting football, and we're going to hear from Ireland boss Hamer Halgrimson.
This is 2FM.
Now, before we chat association football with Alan Colley, you mentioned at the start of the show, great news for Sarah Healy on Friday night, 1500 metres victory in the Diamond League, becoming one of only three athletes to win a point scoring race at a Diamond League meeting. However, even better news, or more good news, I should say, for Irish athletics, because Mark English is after smashing his Irish 800 metre record once again. He ran a sub-144 in a World Continental Tour gold meeting in the Netherlands. He ran 1 minute 43.92 seconds. So a new Irish record in the 800 metres. Massive congratulations to Mark English.
Absolutely. Al, Caoimhín Kelleher decides he's going to leave Liverpool, heads off down to Brentford. Spurs sack Ange. Now looks like Thomas Frank will be gone to Spurs before Caoimhín Kelleher even gets to a training session. Is it good for Caoimhín Kelleher, or could this be awkward for Caoimhín Kelleher?
It's not ideal, Ruby, but I don't think it'll have a major impact in terms of they're signing him, and that those discussions obviously would have happened with the manager, but also nowadays director of football, the head of recruitment, all that kind of thing. So I'm sure there was a team behind it as well, as much as the manager. So it's not ideal, because you're probably signing because he would have met with Thomas Frank and maybe the stuff that he's been saying to him, and would have liked the fact that the reputation that he has, and maybe would have liked the things that he was saying to him when they did meet. But I still don't think it will impact him. He'll still be the Brentford number one. I'm sure another kind of very credible manager will come in and take over at Brentford, and I don't think he'll have any issues in relation to him being the number one, because that's why they're signing him.
Okay, speaking of credible managers, let's hear from Ireland boss Hamer Halgrimson out of tomorrow night's clash away to Luxembourg.
Yeah, the purpose of this camp was also to look at new faces, so we will make some changes. Even though we were really happy with the performance, we will make some changes for this game. Yeah, and hopefully everybody will have their time to shine. But of course, we would like to keep some consistency as well and build on what we've been doing well. I think we played probably one of our best games as a team. We don't want to miss that in the game against Luxembourg.
Do you see this as a template for the Armenia game, the first away game of the World Cup campaign?
Yeah, but it's similar. This camp now is similar to the one we will do in September, meaning we're playing the higher ranked team first at home and then the lower ranked team away a few days later, and just the preparation both mentally and physically, is important for us to prepare for September. Like every one of you know, that this World Cup campaign comes and goes really quickly, so we need to have everything spot on once it comes to September, and that's I think is a good preparation for us.
Have you looked back at the previous games against Luxembourg, and maybe in particular the defeat in Dublin seemed to have a huge kind of psychological effect on the players and on the nation even?
I don't look at Luxembourg like this. They have just shown in the past how quickly they have developed as a football team. I've had the same coach for a long time, really consistent in team selection. So it's more like playing a club team. I watched the Sweden game when they played here. They beat Sweden 1-0. Could have scored more goals against Sweden. I know a little bit about them, so, and the strength of Sweden. So it's that good team that a win here would be really good for us at this stage. So I hope nobody is taking them lightly.
Hamer Halkinson speaking to our own Tony O'Donoghue there. Encouraging signs against Senegal, Alan. Like, how do you weigh up this balance of performance-related results compared to an actual victory and getting that mental side of actually winning matches into the squad?
Yeah, the only thing, Shane, normally I'd, especially at the end of season and friendlies, and he's still trying to obviously unearth maybe a couple of players, I'd always be very much for the performance and to see progress and momentum. But I suppose because of the results that we've had, we're looking for results as well on top of even in these games. Now, the momentum when they beat Bulgaria in those couple of games, you wanted to carry on that momentum. So I think that's why the result became a bit more important the other night. But I actually felt the performance was really good. And generally, if the performance is good, the result will take care of itself. That's what you would be hoping anyway. So I was really upbeat after the game. Now, I know Senegal left out a few of their heavy hitters because they're playing England, I think, tomorrow. But overall, I think the performance was very good. He went with a strong team, added in a couple of new inclusions, if you like. Jack Taylor got a start. McAteer, who I was very impressed with, Casey McAteer, I thought he played very well and will be a good addition to the squad as well, wide right. So I was upbeat after the game, Shane, and I can certainly see progress. And I can also see a pragmatism to this manager in the sense that it's not the way it was, I suppose, with the previous manager, where it seemed to be just all or nothing in terms of the way we play. He can adapt. We've seen the other night he's well able to. I would almost feel like he's very realistic, and in the way he wants the players to play, it's you deal with whatever situation arises in that moment. Obviously, to have a game plan, to have a structure, and as you would expect with any high profile team, but certainly in those moments that he wants the players to make realistic decisions, not making crazy decisions like what we see with a lot of teams trying to play out from the back. There's none of that stuff. He's happy to get it forward, almost like an Irish style, if you like, Shane, and I've no issues with it whatsoever. We play at the right times, and also if he's happy to get it forward and get up and support the forward players, play from there as well. So I can certainly see progress, and I was happy with the game the other night.
Not losing is a good way to start. Thomas Tuchel, England got plenty of boos and criticism during the week, and he didn't shy away from it, did he?
I watched the game, Ruby. It was dreadful. Now, talk Shocking. About like an end of season, and especially those players, high profile, the season that they've had with the clubs. I have an issue with them playing around, and I know like it kind of maybe feeds into the Gaelic chat with the condensed season and different things, and the calendar is so kind of stacked, but playing these games at this time of year, the last place Harry Kane or any of those boys, now obviously he's the ultimate professional, but some of those players, believe me, if you were inside their head, the last place they wanted to be,
the pride of representing your country, Alan Connolly.
I know, Shane, you have to be realistic about these things as well, and as much as there's huge pride for all those lads, they're playing Andorra away in a half empty stadium, and they're probably saying to themselves, do we need this? They don't need it, but you still have to go out and play. It was only 1-0. They got the job done. They're just thinking, get out of here quick.
Very much so. Elsewhere in the news today, we will be previewing Luxembourg-Ireland tomorrow, by the way, in the company of Paul Curry, Mark Langdon, and we'll hear from Tony, who's over there. Everton have offered Seamus Coleman a new contract with the Republic of Ireland international. Now, mulling over the deal, Coleman has just finished an injury-plagued season, making just 3 Premier League starts. The Toffees had already confirmed they wanted the former Sligo Rovers star to stay with them in some role. Possibility that it could be a coaching role under David Moyes. However, they announced this afternoon they wish to retain him as a player. Do you feel we will see Seamus Coleman being there as a player?
Yeah, I think so, Shane. He still probably feels as though he can contribute. His fitness levels, I'm sure, will be up to that, but it will also be a case of managing that, and then I'd say he'll only feature in certain games, if you like, but you won't be getting a full season of playing week in, week out. Now Seamus will want that because he's so determined, but I think Moyes, to be fair, and he spoke so glowingly about him towards the end of the season, yeah, there, about giving him the new contract, I'd say between the two of them, Seamus can nearly decide some of the games that he wants to play in and not want to play in, and also determine his future. With, I'd say he'll end up being a coach there as well. There's rare players and unique players over the course of their career. Maybe Ruby stepping into, he's one like can go to Willie Mullins and say, Willie, what do you want me to do, Willie? No problem. And Willie would say, Ruby, you have your choice here, whatever you want. So Seamus Coleman is very much in that regard with Moyes. He absolutely loves him. Would I be right on that, Ruby?
Next up is the new music show with Beto da Silva tomorrow night. We will also make up, seeing as Alan reviewed the French Open. We will have Gary Cahill tomorrow evening, and Declan Quigley will be joining us on the rise of Alex Stone in Formula 2, thanks to Ronan Laura and Laura D. Davis. Shane Dawson and myself back tomorrow night, and on that note, Alan Colley, I look forward to not talking to you next Monday.
Good luck.